Bill, you are just here. And that is the post. Yes, it is.
Prime Minister, ministers, guests, and colleagues. This is a very special day for the UK community of condensed matter scientists, for the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, and for the Science and Engineering Research Council. It therefore gives me great pleasure, on my first day in office, to welcome you all, both on behalf of Council and personally. Especially, Prime Minister, we welcome you, for you've taken a keen interest in the scientific and technical possibilities of neutron scattering. Some years ago, you visited the university groups using Harwell facilities, and as Secretary of State, you authorized our joining the Institut Louis Langevin in Grenoble. We're delighted, too, that so many distinguished overseas guests have been able to come, both from governments and from the scientific communities. From UK government, we are pleased to welcome from the DES, the Secretary of State, and the Honourable Peter Brook, and from DTI, Mr. Geoffrey Patti. We're glad to see Mr. Skeet, Chairman of the Parliamentary and Scientific Committee, local MPs, the many colleagues who have been involved with the responsibilities for designing, building, and commissioning the spallation neutron source and its instruments, the representatives of neighbouring local government. We're grateful to you all for honouring this occasion with your presence. Now, what is so special that it provides us with this occasion?
I wasn't quite sure where the best place to point. Well, it's this.
And all the way back and around into the other room, as some guests have already seen and others will see this afternoon. At full power, the SNS will be the most intense neutron source in the world. Today is the christening. It still has to grow to maturity, and that is a development in itself of the handling of charged particle beams. But already at 5% of full power, with 10% expected by the end of the year, the SNS is producing scientific data of a superb quality. Why do we want neutrons? Let me remind you that to most scientists, for most of the time, the building blocks of matter are neutrons, protons, and electrons. Apart from the first few minutes of the universe, these three and their complex interactions provide the raw materials for everything from galaxies to life, with engineering firmly in the middle, but using the same blocks. These individual blocks can be extracted from matter and can then be used as probes of the state of other matter, as in electron microscopes using extracted electrons, or as with X-rays, which are produced by disturbing the electron building blocks. Neutrons are more difficult to extract, but it happens in nuclear reactors and in machines such as the SNS. They may then be used as probe beams to study matter, rather like X-rays, but they have both a complementary and very much wider use. In a reactor, neutrons are produced by nuclear fission, the process which produces nuclear power and usually provides a continuous flux of neutrons, as at the ILL. The spallation neutron source produces neutrons by a different process, neutrons spallate or knocked out of a heavy target, uranium, when bombarded by a high-energy proton beam. The beam is not limited by the same considerations as a reactor is limited, and the neutrons are produced in very intense pulses, as Dr. Manning will discuss later. Reactors and accelerator-based neutron sources are complementary in the way they work, the way they are used, and the science they do. In the overlap region, exists a region where they do comparable things, the SNS will be many times, 10 or 20 times, more intense even than the ILL. Prime Minister, old professorial habits die hard, more so since they were only yesterday's. I readily agreed to the suggestion to give a brief discourse, 1 minute, on why neutrons from these machines are so useful for our research. Condensed matter research seeks to understand how matter is stuck together and how it has the properties it has. We may be dealing with solids in crystalline form or in glassy form, with liquids ranging from high temperature melts to water, with a range of chemical systems, including polymers, with biological membranes, and so on. To these fields, neutron scattering tells us about atomic arrangements when the information cannot be obtained by X-rays, such as the hydrogen positions in proteins, the partial order in liquids, and such as atomic imperfections in technological materials. Even more significantly, neutrons tell us about the atomic dynamics, diffusion and vibration, which is at the basis of so much of physics and chemistry. In the study of imperfections, we can follow with neutron scattering the process of weakening of alloys and of the atomic integrity of welds. These are just a few items. Neutrons can be used for these studies because of a fortunate combination of characteristics. Their wavelength is right, it's comparable with atomic spacings. They have no charge, they can look at thick samples. Different isotopes of the same element scatter differently, which gives an added variable to scattering experiments. And they have mass, so they interact with moving atoms. These four characteristics mean that the enormous range of problems referred to can be tackled. In structure, neutrons are critically complementary to X-rays, especially extending our knowledge of liquids and glasses. In motion, neutrons are unique in their comprehensiveness. But there is a further characteristic which has changed the whole subject and continues to do so. That is our understanding of an everyday phenomenon like magnetism. Because of circulating currents inside the neutron, and even high energy physicists can claim a relevance here, the neutron itself has a magnetic moment. Firing it at magnetic materials allows one to discover their magnetic structure and the way these structures are excited magnetically, just as the neutron mass allows us to see how crystal structures and melts are excited dynamically. Magnetism is on a sounder footing, and questions about technological magnetic materials can be addressed. And there has literally been no other way of obtaining this information. For all this, and undoubtedly other things not yet thought of, we now have the SNS. It is the largest project that SERC has undertaken and has spanned over three chairmen, Sam Edwards, Jeffrey Allen, and John Kingman, not forgetting Brian Flowers, who at the time of our entry to the ILL negotiated the clause about, quote, the next source being built in the UK. Here it is. The tradition of neutron scattering, which has grown up in the UK, fed initially on the AEA reactors, without which we should never have learnt the subject. But subjects develop, and with the obsolescence of our national-based particle physics machines, Nimrod and Nina, there was a wonderful opportunity to redeploy some of the equipment and buildings and redirect effort to satisfy other areas of scientific demand. The achievement of such a change of role reflects great credit on the RAL, which means, of course, its staff and directors. A machine like this constitutes a threshold. Below it, you can do nothing. Over it, you can develop and exploit as you can afford. That process can be accelerated by international collaboration, which we welcome even more in its own right. I have worked extensively at the ILL. It is a pleasurable and rewarding experience, gaining from its international nature. Council has already established links with the SNS for specific projects with West Germany for work on neutrinos, with India, where scientists have constructed a novel detector for one of the instruments, with Italy for a new type of spectrometer, with the combination of the EEC and France and West Germany for examining the possibilities of using muon beams to study condensed matter, and muons can be made parasitically in the SNS. Council wishes to encourage and extend these collaborations to some form of partnership, and discussions are currently underway. The machine was approved in 1977. Work started in 1978, and it first produced neutrons in December 1984 and began its first scheduled operation in June of this year. The whole project has been a remarkable achievement, not without its difficulties. Dr. Manning succeeded Dr. Stafford as director in 1981, and I should like to invite him, Dr. Manning, to tell us more about the project. Dr. Manning.
Thank you, Bill. Prime Minister, ministers, ambassadors, guests, colleagues, and friends, I look up there. I am delighted you have all joined us on this day. The SNS has taken 7 years to build. The experimental program started in June, but today is the official launch, the christening. We all rejoice in reaching this stage after a long and often difficult building phase. The child is, as you see, a very large one, but it is in excellent health. I am sure that many of you would like to ask me, what is the SNS and why is it so important? The letters stand for spallation neutron source, but I guess that will not help many of you. Spall is an old word used in quarrying or mining, meaning to chip or to splinter. For us, the splinters that we want are the neutrons. The hammer is a high energy proton beam, and the rock is a uranium target. The SNS is a facility for producing short, very intense bursts of low energy neutrons. Professor Mitchell has already told us why neutrons are such a valuable tool, but all of you know that the nuclear reactor is the way to produce them. So why is the SNS so good? The best reactor in the world for producing beams of low energy neutrons is the one at our sister institute, ILL, in Grenoble. Its source of neutrons is a uranium-235 core, the size of a dustbin, about this big, in which 60 megawatts of heat are produced. It is not possible to increase the neutron intensity by, say, a factor of 10, as the scientists would wish, because 600 megawatts would melt that core. If we look at the way the scientists use the neutrons, they have to measure their energy, and one of the ways of doing this is to time them over a known distance. To do this, they close a tap in the beamline and only let the neutrons out in short bursts with rather large gaps between the bursts. Short in this case means typically a few millionths of a second, and the gaps are a few hundredths of a second. And it is clear from these typical numbers that the process is very inefficient. The SNS is much more efficient because we produce the neutrons only when they are wanted. I have said that our hammer is a high-energy proton beam. To produce that beam requires an accelerator, and since we want to produce the neutrons in intense bursts, the accelerator must produce intense bursts of protons. The accelerator itself is 50 meters in diameter, and it accelerates bunches of protons to an energy of 800 MeV, 50 times per second. 800 MeV is the energy a proton would gain if you accelerated it between two terminals with 800 million volts between them. And that is clearly impossible in a single gap. So we have to be a little cleverer. And we achieve it by using 12 gaps 10,000 times. Each gap then only requires about 8,000 volts. To do this, the protons are constrained within a toroidal vacuum chamber, and they are kept within this racetrack by steering magnets, and as they circulate, radio frequency accelerating cavities give the protons accurately controlled kicks that progressively raise their energy. The 10,000 circuits are completed in a hundredth of a second. The bunches of protons are then extracted from the accelerator and transported the 150 meters onto a uranium target in the shielding behind me here. At that point, each proton produces about 25 neutrons in the target. These neutrons are slowed down in moderators placed above the target and below the target, and then there are holes in the shielding which face these moderators. 9 holes on this side, 9 holes on the other side. Thus, each cycle of the accelerator produces a burst of slow neutrons leaving each of the 18 beam holes, and this whole process is repeated 50 times per second. As I said earlier, we started our experimental program in June. The first month was a rather faltering start. We achieved 10 microamp hours, about 1/2000th of our specification. In July, we raised that 10 up to 70, and in August to 420. In September, we only ran for 1 week, but we had a further improvement of a factor of 3, and all of those factors raised us to an intensity of about 5% of the design. We are reasonably confident that we will reach 10% by the end of this year, but we expect to take probably a further year to reach the full specification. Let me now turn to the utilization of the neutrons we produce. There are 3 main ways they may be used. One is to scatter them from a sample material and to detect those that have not lost energy, elastic scattering. If the sample has a regular structure, this elastic scattering has a regular pattern, which characterizes the periodic structure of the sample. The process is called diffraction. Hence, if the elastic scattering is measured, the structure and composition of the sample can be determined at the atomic level. The second process is to study inelastic scattering from the sample. The neutrons can give energy to the sample, thereby exciting the atomic structure to some higher level. If these processes are observed by measuring the energy of the neutron before it hits the sample and the energy when it leaves the sample, one can investigate dynamic structure, the motion of the atoms and their strength of their binding are determined. The third process that can be used is that of neutron radiography. Neutrons can be used to form a shadowgraph of an object in the same way as X-rays are used in conventional medical work. Since we have a pulse neutron source, we can measure the neutron energy and hence make, at one time, many hundred neutron radiographs of the object. The neutron is a particularly useful probe for radiography because its absorption varies with its energy and depends upon the atoms of the material through which it passes. Hence, the internal composition of an object can be determined, and one can even measure the temperature of the material, since the absorption pattern of the neutrons is also dependent upon the temperature and motion of the atoms. So there are 3 methods in which we can use the neutrons. Professor Mitchell has already indicated what areas of science can use neutrons as a probe. They span from the esoteric to the practical. The neutron scattering scientists have already been busy, and I am delighted to report that at this very early stage, users from the universities and from the laboratory have already achieved excellent results. The first scientific papers are about to be submitted. New structures have been determined. Inelastic processes not seen before have been observed. A proposal to determine the temperature of turbine blades of an operational jet engine has been made, and we have tested the process. An excellent start has been made. The future looks extremely rosy. Let me now put the SNS in a world context. The design is for an average proton current of 200 microamps, and we currently have reached 10 microamps. Even at that level, we have the world's best pulse neutron source. The comparison with steady-state sources is more difficult because in many respects they are complementary. Nevertheless, if a comparison is made with the world's best steady-state source for condensed matter research, the ILL reactor, the SNS at full specification is about a factor of 10 better for the thermal region, is about a factor of 3 worse for cold neutrons, and is about a factor of 1,000 better at 1 electron volt. The SNS also has potential for development beyond the current design. And you will not be surprised, we've already started thinking about the ways we could achieve that. These include, 1, better utilization of the existing facility by increasing the number of instruments from 10 to 25. You are standing in front of beam ports here, and we hope in the future we will have instruments filling this space. We're delighted they're not here today. Secondly, we can produce muon beams as a second probe of condensed matter. Thirdly, we can enhance the neutron yield by using targets containing enriched fuels. And fourthly, we can increase the proton intensity from the accelerator. We already have some international collaboration on the utilization of the SNS. But if we are to achieve its full potential, we will need further assistance from our European colleagues. We welcome you. We encourage you to join us in this very exciting project. I have given a rather hurried and hence scanty description of what the SNS is, its areas of utilization, and its development potential. I hope I have conveyed to you some of our excitement in the scope that exists with this new facility to further the needs of science and engineering. We are proud, and I believe justifiably so, with what we have built. I was myself project leader for the facility for the first 4 years of its life, and hence I know it would have been impossible to achieve what we have done without a great deal of dedication, hard work, and brilliance of a large number of people. They are too numerous to name, and hence the best I can do is to thank 3 bodies of dedicated workers. Firstly, the university users. Secondly, the industrial companies who were involved. And lastly, but by no means least deserving, my own staff. I thank you all. I would now like to welcome the Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Margaret Thatcher.
Your Excellencies, Ministers, Chairman, Director, staff of the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, ladies and gentlemen. First, may I thank you, Mr. Chairman and Director, for not forgetting your professorial habits. I remember very well in my days at Oxford how very grateful we were when at the beginning of term, one of our most distinguished professors, Professor Sir Cyril Norman Hinshelwood, always began his opening lecture with, "Of course you will remember," and then thoughtfully gave us an excellent summary of all that we had carelessly forgotten or never knew. We didn't quite follow everything you said, Professor and Director, but it sounded all marvelous, and we'll look at it very carefully so as to enlarge our understanding later. Now, although this is my first visit to the combined site, I had the pleasure when Secretary of State for Education and Science of naming the Appleton Laboratory then at Slough, and I'm delighted to be here today at the combined Rutherford-Appleton Laboratory. This laboratory enjoys the highest scientific reputation. It serves some 4,000 university workers in a wide range of scientific fields. Modern scientific research is demanding, and it can be very expensive. This laboratory has an annual budget of some £60 million. Basic research can be a springboard to the creation of wealth, as well as to other less tangible but equally significant outcomes. I and my ministerial colleagues understand the importance of basic science, as illustrated by the work of this laboratory. The spallation neutron science, and the spallation neutron source, is the largest facility built wholly by CERC during its 20 years. And the people from this laboratory and from industry have worked in partnership to overcome the enormous technological challenges which the design and construction have presented. Sometimes the challenges have been great, and of course they're not necessarily all on a scientific score. When Nimrod, the earlier accelerator on this site, was first commissioned, there was difficulty in getting the beam around the circle, and even greater difficulty in finding out why. Somebody, so I'm told, had left a steel rule in the chamber. When the magnets were turned on, the steel rule jumped up and blocked the beam. When they were turned off, it dropped down and couldn't be detected. I'm very pleased to report that there's been no such difficulty with a particle accelerator in the SNS. The total capital cost of the SNS is about £60 million. And I hope it isn't too rash of me if I say I think it's been worth every penny. It would, of course, have been much higher had it not been possible to reuse existing buildings and equipment. I have my own reasons for being specially pleased to be asked to come here today. The research to be undertaken on the SNS, as you have described, Director, is concerned with the structure and dynamics of materials. And it was in the field of the structure of materials that I myself carried out some very modest research. Admittedly, that was a few years ago, and using only X-rays, and long before the age of computers. I think some of the work, which took quite a long time then, could have been done with the help of this source in a picosecond or two. If only I could have something like this in number 10 and use it to the same effect on my current concerns. I sometimes look back nostalgically to the days when I worked in the realms of logic and reason. Human nature is so much more difficult, but of course, then every manager of a laboratory also knows about that too. I share the excitement here surrounding what will be the most intense neutron source in the world. We've heard a brief description of what the SNS is, of its exciting future in the support of science and engineering research. Understanding the structure and dynamics of materials is at the center of so much modern high technology. No nation which wants to prosper in today's world can afford to ignore these areas of study. Industry has already shown some interest in using the SNS, and it's hard to think of a better indication that we have a winner. But another sign of the potential of this machine is the great interest shown by other countries, many of whom are represented here today. We welcome you, and we know that our cooperation will be fruitful and to the benefit of all of us. As Professor Mitchell has just described, we already have agreements for the use of the SNS with France, Germany, Italy, Sweden, and the European Community. We're also discussing a full partnership that could involve a number of countries. With some of our European neighbors, these discussions are at an advanced stage. We shall be pushing ahead as fast as possible to make the SNS a truly international facility. The SNS is not the first example of European collaboration in condensed matter research. Dr. Manning has referred to our sister institution, the Institut Lalangevin at Grenoble. When I was Secretary of State for Education and Science, I authorized the United Kingdom to join the ILL, and it's wonderful to see how it has blossomed into a world leader. May that collaboration continue and flourish. The government welcomes the current discussions about building a European synchrotron radiation facility also in Grenoble. Along with the ILL and the SNS, this will underline Europe's leading position in condensed matter research. I now have a task to undertake, formally to open and name this impressive facility. Isis is the name at Oxford of one of our greatest and most famous national rivers, the Thames, the source of so much history and a facility for so much commerce. Isis was also an Egyptian goddess whose power transcended that of the other deities and who could bring back others to life. It is appropriate that this new facility, which has grown from the ashes of Nimrod, should be named after her. I'm now formally going to name this new facility, but may I just say how exciting I found it, how exciting I know you will find it, and how pleased I am that you too will be excited with the results you will attain. I wish you a marvelous time in using this facility, which I'm now going to name the ISIS.
Prime Minister, you do very great honour to the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory by your presence here this morning, and the members of that laboratory have asked me on their behalf, since you've left the laboratory with a splendid memento of your visit, if we can leave you with a small memento of your visit here today. I know I speak for everyone here, both members of the laboratory and others, when I thank you, Prime Minister, most warmly for adding luster to this great occasion in the long history of British science. And not only of British science, as the presence of distinguished colleagues from Europe and from outside Europe bears eloquent witness. This may very well be a great occasion in the history of European science. I hope that it will not be long before the spallation neutron source is, in a very real sense, the European spallation neutron source. And even the adjective European may prove in the end, and I hope will prove in the end, to be too restrictive a description. Professor Mitchell and Dr. Manning have spoken eloquently about the opportunities for different branches of science which this powerful source of neutrons provides. And I know myself, if I can grind an axe as a new Vice Chancellor on behalf of the universities, that there are many groups in our universities who are eager to set up their experiments around this target. But we should also remember, and I'm glad, Prime Minister, that you stressed it as well, that the SNS is not just an opportunity for future science. It is in itself a major technical achievement, one of which David Gray and his team must today be justly proud. It's a characteristic of big science that it pushes engineering to its very limits and beyond, and often leads to advances in engineering practice, new techniques and new materials, new methods of control, which may well find application in different areas, some of them closer to everyday life than the apparently arcane areas of science which will be pursued. If science is to advance, our scientists must have the necessary tools, and today these include large facilities like the SNS. Nevertheless, in the end, new ideas, new understanding of nature, come not from machines, but from scientists. And I cannot overemphasize, and overemphasize to you, Prime Minister, and to you, Secretary of State, the importance of maintaining a flow of some of our best young talent into basic research. This is in no way inconsistent with our concern for the application and exploitation of science in support of the economy. And indeed, in the long run, a healthy science base is an essential precondition for technological innovation in industry. I know that these points are well taken by you, Prime Minister, and by Sir Keith Joseph. But we as scientists can hardly expect you in government to accord the importance to basic science and the priority to basic science which it needs
if we don't put our own case clearly and convincingly to the nation as a whole. We need to convey both the intellectual excitement of the scientific chase and the extent to which the life of an advanced society relies on the results, often the unforeseen results, of past scientific achievement. Projects like the SNS are part of the essential long-term investment in our nation's future. And I take your presence here today, Prime Minister, as an encouraging sign of recognition of its status. We stand today at the beginning of a great scientific adventure. And I wish good fortune to all those scientists, including, I hope, an increasing number from other countries, who will soon begin to reap the benefits of the foresight of our predecessors.
Thank you.